Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com. Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
But first, remembering Kurt Cobain, the voice of his generation. April 5th marks the 20th anniversary of Cobain's suicide at age 27. He had a history of depression and chronic pain, a heroin addiction, and a complicated relationship with fame. Charles Cross is the author of the definitive Cobain biography, Heavier Than Heaven, and he's just released a new book called Here We Are Now, The Lasting Impact of Kurt Cobain. Steve Paulson talks with him.
Charles, can you take me back to how you found out about Kurt Cobain's death?
I was the editor of a magazine called The Rocket, which was a biweekly music and entertainment magazine in the Northwest. And I was sitting in my office on April 8th, 1994, and got a phone call from someone at a local radio station. And the words out of his mouth were, "Do you think it's possible Kurt Cobain is dead?" And that radio station had just gotten a call from, bizarrely, an electrical contractor who'd been installing some stuff in Kurt's house. And the police had just then been called. And the station was calling me to see if I potentially could confirm it or if I knew anything.
And you hadn't known anything at that point?
Of course. No one knew anything. Everyone knew Kurt was struggling with drugs. That was no secret in Seattle or anywhere in the world at that point. And he obviously had had Rome just a month before, which, even though it was reported as a drug overdose, there were already rumors and talk that it was a suicide attempt. The words out of my mouth to the radio station were, no, it couldn't possibly be Kurt. And I think that was just denial to some degree, but it was a slight truth, I guess, in that I knew some of Kurt's friends, and many of them, frankly, were worse off than Kurt in terms of their drug problems. And I just thought it had to be one of his buddies. It just simply couldn't be him. But it certainly was him, and we think he died on April 5th.
Of course, it turned out that Kurt Cobain didn't die of a drug overdose. He died from a shotgun. What was your reaction when you found out?
Well, obviously, his suicide was incredibly shocking, and his choice of death to shoot himself with a shotgun was unbelievably horrific. In researching his life later as his biographer, what I found out was that that was one of probably a dozen suicide attempts. And if you actually look at his drug addiction and how many times he overdosed on drugs, those, to some degree, you can also call sort of a suicide attempt, or at least a choice to put yourself in a reckless disregard for living. This was part of a pattern, but his death was just so horrible. It truly is one of the most horrible days of my life. It certainly is the most horrible day of Seattle music ever. For anybody that was a Nirvana fan, it was unbelievably heartbreaking. And whether you were a fan of Nirvana or not, a celebrity of that stature choosing to take his own life at the height of his fame was enough to make you take notice. I do think that plays some role in Kurt's enduring legacy, and it is one of the reasons we're still talking about him 20 years after his death.
Well, we should talk about his legacy. I mean, it's been 20 years now since he died, and you have a book out on the 20th anniversary of his death, and the subtitle of your book is The Lasting Impact of Kurt Cobain. What do you see as his legacy? Why does he still matter?
Well, in the book, I outline five or six different areas where you can kind of measure his impact. But by far and away, music is the way his impact has had the biggest shadow.
Especially on alternative music. Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, I mean, they really shifted the way alternative music was performed, right?
Well, I would go beyond that, and I would say they had a major impact on shifting all of music. In some ways, they made the genre of alternative even happen. But I think their impact was almost larger. Alternative rock, there were Sonic Youth, and there were a number of other alternative rock bands that had had some level of success before Nirvana. But what happened is that mainstream music changed. The music that was on top 40 radio changed after Nirvana, not just the music that was on college radio stations or on alternative stations. In some ways, Nirvana's music, which let's just take Smells Like Teen Spirit and say it's an aggressive sounding song, they made pop music become more aggressive.
So explain that for me. Why was this such a great album? Never mind.
Well, I argue it's a great album to some degree because it is. We can kind of look at the critical reputation, and there is a point where for a record to have both that level of commercial success and over time be ranked so high in critics' polls, maybe there actually is some truth. I quote Occam's razor in the book. Sometimes the simplest answer to any problem is the answer that's right before you. To me personally, as a listener, the reason that it's a great record is that the songwriting is just incredible. Listen to Smells Like Teen Spirit, read the lyrics, and you'll be blown away by Kurt's artistry. But I also think sonically that you listen to Smells Like Teen Spirit, and before Kurt even sings, it's a great song. That drum beat that Dave Grohl pounds out starting that song is just unstoppable. Kurt wrote very, very catchy songs, but he also had a great band. He had a great producer. Everything came together on that record. Every single piece of that album, from the album cover to the name of the band to the name of the album, it all just was absolutely perfect and perfectly timed. Smells Like Teen Spirit changed the entire template for what a hit pop song could be, even on alternative rock. It's a hit. It has that undefinable essence of hitdom. The voice, the melodies, the contrast, everything about that song is a hit. But prior to 1991, there were never hits like that on the radio.
Now, it would seem, in retrospect, certainly, that Kurt Cobain had a hard time handling success. I mean, he was suddenly huge. He was monstrously popular, and then his life just spiraled downhill.
Well, he did have a hard time handling success, but at the same point, he had a hard time handling life when he wasn't successful. He just simply had a hard time handling life. You know, that's an argument that often gets bantered around. Did fame cause Kurt's death? If MTV hadn't played his song so much, and if he hadn't become so popular, would he be alive today? I think that the truth is that Kurt struggled way before he ever became famous, and that many of the things that were present in his life, depression, physical pain, a tendency towards addiction, a very difficult family upbringing, all of those things were true before he ever picked up a guitar and before he ever was on MTV. And if fame were the only problem in his life, he certainly could have retreated from the fame and quit. You know, that is possible. But I think there was a whole number of different psychological things at play that sort of led to, ultimately, his decision to take his own life.
Of course, we can never know why someone chooses to commit suicide, but what's your best guess as to why he chose to kill himself?
Well, I think it traces to the physical pain that he had dealt with during much of his life. That, more than anything, I think leads to hopelessness among people when someone has chronic pain that they don't feel like that they can get an answer to.
What was the chronic pain he was dealing with?
He had chronic stomach pain that had haunted him for most of his adult life. and he also had chronic back pain, and he certainly had chronic depression and chronic psychological pain. You add all of that mix together, and then you put the issues that are complicated by his addiction into there, and you get a very toxic mix.
His addiction to heroin in particular?
Exactly. But one thing that I think that it is interesting to note, that there were a number of people that I interviewed for Heavier Than Heaven who were friends of Kurt, who grew up with him in that world, and several of them are dead from either suicide or drug addiction now. And these are people that never had an album out and never were on the cover of Rolling Stone. These problems are not just about his fame or about his career choice. They are a result of a whole complicated series of things. Some of it, frankly, is being from a socioeconomic world that Kurt was from in Aberdeen that gave people less choices and made suicide an option that was more talked about. And the suicide rates are certainly higher in some of those communities.
You describe Kurt Cobain as the last true rock star. What makes you think that?
I hope there are other rock stars. I hope he's not the last. But to this point in time, there hasn't been anybody that quite has had that singular focus in their songwriting. There have been other great rock stars, but there hasn't been rock star, capital rock, and also a star that it isn't just about the commercial success, it's about their artistic statement. I think ultimately that's one reason we're still talking about Kurt, is that that songwriting skill that he brought to everything he did, that voice, not just his vocals, the sheer curtness that was in every song he wrote, that charisma, that undefinable star quality, we haven't seen that in one person in rock in the last 20 years.
Charles Cross is the author of Here We Are Now, The Lasting Impact of Kurt Cobain.